Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Tired, fresh back from Washington, D.C. I had a trip to the White House, which was honestly so cool, let's be honest. I'm going to fangirl geek out a little bit. I've never been to the White House before, let alone been able to sit at a roundtable with the President of the United States and talk about something that I deeply care about, an issue that I have been harping on in Seattle for 15 years, and that is the scourge of left-wing violent extremism, mostly perpetrated by Black Bloc Antifa members, and the reality that elected leaders here, Democrats and the legacy media simply refuse to acknowledge the threat of Antifa. They refuse to acknowledge that Antifa even exists. So just kind of behind the scenes on how this all came together, and I want to get to the meat and potatoes of what we talked about during this roundtable. So just really fascinating, and a lot of good independent journalists and content creators on it. You know, I got a call late Monday. Hey, do you want to do a roundtable at the White House? About Antifa, and I'm like, sure, you know, let me clear my schedule, of course. And we didn't know that the president was going to be there. They just said that it's going to be, you know, you, Andy Ngo, a few other people, and members of the administration. And so we figured maybe Pam Bondi or Kash Patel. And we didn't actually find out until a couple hours beforehand that the president was going to be there alongside Kristi Noem, the DHS secretary, and Kash Patel, the FBI director, and Attorney General Pam Bondi. So it was a whole big spectacle. And a lot of my favorite people were there, people who have done meaningful work on the ground. Katie Davis Court, she's been doing great work in Portland. Of course, Andy Ngo, who's the OG of uncovering and unmasking Antifa. Our friend Jonathan Cho, who had some interesting remarks about Antifa's intersection with the homeless industrial complex. But here's how President Donald Trump opened up the roundtable.
It should be clear to all Americans that we have a very serious left-wing terror threat in our country. Radicals associated with the domestic terror group Antifa that you've heard a lot about lately, and I've heard a lot about them for 10 years. And other far-left extremists have been carrying out a campaign of violence against ICE agents and other officials charged with enforcing federal law. And in Portland, Oregon, Antifa thugs have repeatedly attacked our offices and laid siege to federal property in an attempt to violently stop the execution of federal law.
And of course, this comes after President Donald Trump designated Antifa a terror organization. And I even had some questions after that about, okay, what does that exactly mean, right, for the prosecution of these cases? And I also understand that there are some challenges. You know, this is one thing, the media will always hang its hat on this, and Democratic politicians, and oh, Antifa is a figment of your imagination, it doesn't even really exist. And that's not true. They call themselves Antifa. It's Rose City Antifa is one of the original sort of entities, cells, if you want, of Antifa down in Portland. But I understand that it's a challenge to prove is someone Antifa per se, but really it boils down to what is their activity? What kind of activity are they engaged in? And you're prosecuting the activity, not the ideology anyway. You're prosecuting the activity, not the label anyway. And so Attorney General Pam Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel talked a little bit about, after that terror designation, what their strategy is moving forward.
We're not going to stop at just arresting the violent criminals we can see in the streets. Fighting crime is more than just getting the bad guy off the streets. It's breaking down the organization brick by brick. Just like we did with cartels, we're going to take the same approach, President Trump, with Antifa. Destroy the entire organization from top to bottom.
What we are doing at the FBI is simple. It does not require rocket science. We are following the money. Money never lies. And that's what it's going to take to bring down this network of organized criminal thugs, gangbangers, and yes, domestic terrorists, because that's what they are.
Yeah, this was interesting because this was a line of conversation. And my argument has always been for the feds taking these cases. You know, clearly in places like Seattle and Portland, there is no interest, next to no interest or political will to prosecute these cases. There have been a handful over the years, but they're always like pled down to something very minor. People don't really suffer any consequences. And that's why Antifa activity has gotten so severe here, because they get away with everything. So first and foremost, you know, the feds taking over these cases and having the Department of Justice under Donald Trump that does consider Antifa to not only be real, but to be terrorists, that helps significantly. But as you go about proving those cases and trying to prove the structure, the conversation around tracking the money and using the resources of the federal government. You know, I think a lot of like my latest assault by Antifa at the ICE facility in Tukwila, you know, nobody's ever been arrested for that. I mean, I got wasp killer directly to the eyes and nobody was ever arrested. But the feds would have had different investigatory tools. I mean, they could have figured out cell phones in the area. Not that the Tukwila Police Department can't do that, but I don't think they're going to expend the resources to do that. So I think the feds could have come in there if they had that case from the beginning because, hey, that's ours. That's a terror. You know, that's a terror organization. And then they could figure out and have, you know, advanced surveillance technology, you know, within the law, but figure out who they were. But Kash Patel brought up this tracking the money thing. And we talked a lot about that at the roundtable. And I think it's important. And that is a tool that the federal government has at its disposal. I'll tell you what, I think that they're going to find Antifa has ties to some very mainstream groups that are donors to the Democratic Party and Democratic Socialists of America, one. I think that as a political party, absolutely. It's almost synonymous. You know how many DSA members are out there marching around in black bloc, wreaking havoc on our communities? So that's one, but some more mainstream ones, and I'm probably going to be, I don't know, they might even try to sue me over it. I bet you I would not be surprised. Can I say this legally? Yeah, I think so. I would not be surprised, in my opinion, if the FBI tracks money that's being used to fund these radical left-wing extremists, and some of that money is tied back to the teachers' unions. Wouldn't be surprised at all. And you look at like, and how many? It's a disproportionate number when we talk about the criminal activists who are arrested for acts of unrest. It's disproportionate how many of them are public school teachers and are members of the unions. So you don't think that some way through some sort of back channel, they're providing some sort of help? I would not be surprised at all. I mean, look at the Washington Education Association. Running snitch lines for people gathering signatures to keep boys out of girls' sports. They're out there, and then people use those snitch lines and go out there and harass and destroy lawful signatures and commit crimes, undermine democracy, voter suppression. And to me, that's being done at the behest of the Washington State Teachers Union. Would not be surprised in any form or fashion if at some point the FBI is able to trace something back to the National Teachers Union. Wouldn't surprise me one bit. All right, let's get to my interaction with the president. Of course, I was, you know, asking all sorts of people for advice, because if you don't watch the show, maybe you're new to it today. I have a complicated history with my like slash dislike for the president of the United States. Never really been a big fan. Of course, I went through a pretty significant red pilling that started mid-2020 because of the riots that were happening here, the lack of coverage, serious coverage that was given to them, and also our many mandates related to the pandemic and, you know, how those were being handled and one man rule and all these things. So it started to be on this red pilling journey that ultimately about a year and a half ago landed on me completely shedding my TDS and announcing that I was going to vote for the first time for President Donald Trump. So let's just say I never expected myself to be invited to the White House with President Trump and be able to talk to him about anything, let alone an issue I care so much about. So of course, first I just talked to him about the importance of, you know, not only to me, but to other people in the room who've been assaulted and doxxed and harassed and threatened by Antifa, how important it is to us that he at least acknowledges the existence of them as an organization.
Mr. President, Brandi Cruz, you're going to hear us be very fired up today, and you can tell, and it's because some of us have been covering Antifa for 15 years and have never had anyone in a position of authority even acknowledge their existence. The single most powerful thing you've done to deal with this scourge has been acknowledging that Antifa is a real thing. I genuinely believe there would be people at these tables who would be dead today and would have been killed in Portland had you not called them a terror organization and said, we're going to bring the full weight of the federal government to bear. I talked to Katie Davis Court in Portland the other day. She'd been assaulted all summer. And she said the same thing. They didn't seem quick to violence as soon as you made that designation. So they're thinking in their heads. They're worried. There's been 24 or so arrested in Portland. They don't want to go to federal prison. There's this video of them, one of them who was in the face of an ICE agent, and then he's in custody shaking. Once you take the mask off, they're nothing.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that was important to relay to him is, yes, we were there to talk about what do we do actually to dismantle this organization so that once he leaves office, it can't quickly reform itself. But just the act, I mean, for all of us in the room who have gone through this, from my crew being mobbed in 2020 at CHOP, you know, what I went through more recently at the ICE facility, it's deeply personal to us. And you could sense the anger amongst a lot of us about, you know, toward the media and certainly toward politicians who will say, oh, that's not really happening. And, you know, we have the scars to prove that it is and the video to prove that it is. So to have the president of the United States say, yes, Antifa is real. Yes, they're domestic terrorists. When we've been shouting it from the rooftop for 15 years is incredibly meaningful to us personally. But I think also a meaningful step toward trying to thwart their criminal activity, because the weaker members of Antifa, the ones who really don't want to do hard prison time, I think that that did make them think twice about, do I continue to do this? I also addressed, as did many on the panel, the media in the room. And that is an experience in and of itself. You see it on TV, these media scrums at the White House. I don't know how he does that every day with the, it's like, and they just shout, and it was crazy. And it also got very vitriolic in there toward the media. And at one point, I actually kind of felt bad for the reporter from CNN. I was like, oh my gosh. But I just, you know, going into this, we had a, and I'll just pull back the curtain a little bit. In the morning, we didn't even know the president was going to be there yet, by the way. I don't think. Yeah, I think I found out just after that. But we had a video call in the morning with Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, who was basically going to walk us through how the day was going to go. And she said, you know, the real goal of today is for you to tell your stories of what's happened to you, what you've seen with Antifa, what you've discovered about Antifa. So the other media in the room, you know, it hears these stories and is maybe going to report on it more honestly. And as soon as she said that, I said, that's like not my goal today at all, because I don't think that the media can be convinced. I didn't walk into that room at all thinking this is my chance to finally get it through to the mainstream news that Antifa is a real thing. And I said, that's just not going to happen. And that's what I told them to their faces.
Frankly, I could not care any less what any of you have to say about this meeting. Could not care any less. We're not here for you. I'm not here to convince any of you that Antifa is a real thing. Because if you have not come to that conclusion by now, you are never going to come to that conclusion because you don't want to see it. And you're going to go and you're going to say it's a bunch of right-wing conservative influencers who are here spinning a tale. I was one of you. I was a mainstream reporter in Seattle for 10 years. I was a TV reporter on the streets doing my job, and I was still assaulted by Antifa. So it's not about being conservative. It's about people who go there and show what they're doing. And when I saw, after all those years, that the media wouldn't be honest about what was happening, that Democratic politicians wouldn't be honest about what was happening, I thought, well, gosh, if they're not being honest about that, maybe they're not being honest about President Trump either. And it opened my mind to just looking at things for what they were. And now I find you quite funny, actually. I'm much happier about it. But, you know, for me, again, I could not care any less the stories that they go to print. This is what I care about. We have 3.5 years. Nothing is guaranteed, although I think if Democrats keep it up, we'll probably have Republican presidents for the next 3 decades. But nothing is guaranteed, and so what I want to see over the next 3.5 years is a full court press to dismantle Antifa once and for all in a meaningful way. I know, Andy, we talked before this about some ideas. That's really what we want to. I don't care what the media says. I don't care what Democrats say. They will never wake up to this fact. So we want the federal government to take as many of these cases as possible, look at the interstate travel between Portland and Seattle when it comes to these people who are committing violent acts, and hopefully in 3.5 years, they will be a shell of their former selves.
Very close to done, and it's Antifa and many others, unfortunately. Yes. There are many others, bad ones. Most have been named terrorist organizations. There are a couple that we're going to. But I think we've got it pretty well covered. But there are many others. But very specifically, today it's Antifa, and it's really bad.
Yeah. So that was the gist of it. We don't need to waste our breath anymore trying to get the media to cover Antifa, trying to get the media to cover left-wing extremism, trying to get Democrats like Bob Ferguson and Attorney General Nick Brown in our state to take it seriously. And Nick Brown will fall on the, oh, well, I prosecuted some of the people from the summer of 2020 when he was the United States Attorney in Seattle, and he did. But these were like two people who lit cop cars on fire and stole rifles out of those cop cars. And by the way, my security guard was the one who disarmed them of those rifles, which like later everyone lied about, but it's okay. So he prosecuted a couple cases, but there could have been thousands of cases to be prosecuted from the summer of 2020. Think of how many cases went unprosecuted. We still have murders from CHOP that weren't even solved. And I bet if the feds had been on it from the beginning and they had said, we're taking all of these cases, they would have solved all these things and they would have made sure we're gonna prosecute this behavior. I mean, the warlord of CHOP who got taxpayer funds to help build like a rap studio or something, he was handing AR-15s to random kids on the street out of the trunk of his car to patrol CHOP as like CHOP security for the autonomous zone. So, you know, they had no interest and showed no interest in prosecuting even very severe instances during 2020 where I think the feds would. And so that's where we need to go from here. Screw the media, screw the Democrats. If they haven't been convinced by now, they're not going to be convinced. So we don't have to. Now, the moment you probably saw everywhere, which I had asked a bunch of people, like I said, what should I say to the president? And I text Nicole, and you know Nicole loves that I love the president now because, I mean, love's a strong word. Look, I'm still critical of the president sometimes when I need to be, and I think that that's appropriate. If I'm ever incapable of being critical of any politician, then I should just quit the show because then what use am I? But I told Nicole, I said, I'm going to tell him that I had TDS. Nicole's like, do not do that. I'm like, no, I think I'm going to tell him that I had Trump derangement syndrome. And so I was like feeling out the vibe. And he came in. He was in a great mood for reasons you'll find out momentarily. But he was laughing. He was joking. And I'm like, I think that I can tell the president about my former bout with TDS. So here's that moment.
I was told by probably a dozen people not to tell you this. I'm going to tell it to you anyway, because it's relevant to what we're talking about. I'm living proof that you can recover from TDS. I had strong Trump derangement syndrome for probably 8 years. This is one of the reasons I recovered from it. And by the way, it's much better to not have TDS. I'm happier, I'm healthier, more successful. I even think I got a little more attractive after I got rid of my Trump derangement syndrome. Yes.
The president of the United States called me very attractive. It was funny. I don't have it, but there was like a Daily Beast article that's like, President Trump, 81, makes creepy remark toward fangirl reporter, 37. And I was like, okay, how can you be offended if I'm not offended by it? And I brought up my looks. And it is true. We all know it. This is the glow of someone who has shed their TDS and their unhinged hatred toward Donald Trump. I have gotten better looking, okay? And it is it just is true. It is what it is. But I'm glad that I told him that. And I think, but it is about the reason we were there. I mean, this, maybe more so than any reason, is why Democrats and the media should take Antifa seriously. This is one of those issues that should be a no-brainer, but for political reasons, they just feel the need to push back. But like, look at me as an example. I mean, 10 years, let's go back even shorter than that. 2 years ago, if you told me I'd vote, I would have never considered voting for Donald Trump. 3 years ago, I wouldn't even call myself, I didn't even consider myself a conservative. Like 10 years ago, I was voting for Hillary Clinton. And so you look at how far I've come, and in part because of reasons like this. The Democrats and the media drove me into the arms of Donald Trump. Quite literally. I mean, shook
as
his
if
hand.
It's a bad
so into his
thing.
Arms. No, but you know what I'm saying is that if not for any other reason, it's like the radical gender ideology issue.
They cling to it.
Yeah, it's like the radical gender ideology issue. They cling to it, even though they know that it is deeply unpopular. And they'll bully, you know, teen girls who are trying to stand up for themselves. And they do that to their own detriment. And fewer people trust the media. If they won't cover that issue, they're calling men, women, all this. Fewer people trust the Democratic Party or think they're sane. So like with the Antifa thing, this has been one of my biggest issues that has red-pilled me over the years. Covering everything that I've covered, all the political violence, everything I've seen and witnessed with my own eyes and endured myself, and to watch Democrats act like it wasn't even that bad. It's, you know, the fiery but mostly peaceful summer of love. And it's like, good Lord, I just had enough of it. And there's many other things, you know, their failure to address the homeless crisis, the crime crisis, the drug crisis, the overtaxation, the fact that Seattle and Portland have become, you know, shitholes, so to speak, and nobody seems to mind. And all they're doing is losing their minds over Donald Trump as a distraction mechanism. So that's kind of why I wanted to point that out is like, look, I had a bad case of TDS, like end stage TDS, but I was able to turn it around because of how crazy the Democratic Party and the media has been. So that should be kind of a warning to them. So one of the really cool things that happened while we were there, and it's actually obviously very significant news, so we could tell something was going on. So President Trump was late. It was supposed to start at 3 p.m. We're waiting, waiting, waiting. He's not coming in. His staff says he's running, you know, 15 to 20 minutes behind. He comes in. He looks like he's in a pretty good mood, but, you know, maybe he's been working a lot. Looks a little like, you know, I don't know, like he was just doing something important. I guess that's the way I can describe it, which I suppose the president always is. But we're halfway through this thing. And then all of a sudden I'm on the edge and through the corner of my eye, I see the vice president and the secretary of state. And they weren't scheduled to be there. And they're out standing outside the door, kind of in the hallway. And Vice President Vance is pacing. He's like back and forth and he's on his phone. And you could tell Marco Rubio is like trying to get the attention of the president. I'm like, something's going on here. And so then there was this moment where I think President Trump saw Marco Rubio out in the open doorway and he invites him to come in.
And by the way, we have Marco Rubio. Marco, come on up here, please. Who's going to bring a little stability to this group? Come on up. Does everybody know Marco Rubio? Is there anybody that doesn't? Some of the reporters don't. That's why they shouldn't be reporters.
Which job is he here for today,
Come
sir?
On up here, Marco. Anything we should know about the Middle East?
That's what we're hoping to talk to you about here, Mr. President.
He's doing a good job. He was born for this job, I can tell you. Daniel, please.
So he says to him, oh, Marco, come on in. Anything you want to tell us about the Middle East? And Marco goes, yeah. After everyone leaves. And so now we're sitting there like, oh, something significant is definitely happening. And then immediately he grabs a piece of paper from Stephen Miller, Marco Rubio does, and he starts frantically writing and then hands that note off to President Trump in front of all of us.
They're smart, but they're not smart enough. My microphone's broken. They're smart, but they're not smart enough. They have been covered by these liberal cities.
I'm just giving. Yeah, I was just given a note by the Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East, and they're going to need me pretty quickly. So I will take a couple of more questions.
Yeah, and apparently the note said, because, I mean, he was holding it, like, up to the light. I'm like, well, the pictures are going to capture that. And it said something about we need you to approve a truth post so you can be the first one to announce the agreement. So clearly he had been on the phone dealing with that, which is what he told us at the beginning. And then Marco Rubio is trying to get his attention, pass him a note. It was just really interesting. I mean, this is history, right? It's historic. And to watch it unfold before our eyes and, you know, seeing the vice president pacing and understanding that something very significant was about to happen. And so, of course, later on, they announced that they had reached a first phase agreement between Hamas and Israel to try to bring an end to the war in Gaza, which is, I mean, not even the Democrats could spin this one. I was searching hard, MSNBC everywhere. I couldn't find any real examples of Democrats trying to paint that as a bad thing. I mean, I'm sure they'll find some, but the whole, you know, free Palestine crowd, it's like, okay, or, you know, end the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. It's like, okay, but Trump is going to be the one to do that. Biden was the one to start it. Trump is going to be the one to end it. So will the, you know, Hamas headscarf wearing crowd give President Trump credit for that? For ending the genocide in Gaza? Probably not. However, we might find out if the rest of the world will on Friday. Apparently, the Nobel Peace Prize is being announced on Friday. President Trump was asked about it actually at our during the press scrum, whether he wants it. And he just said, you know, oh, a lot of people have said that I should get it, right? Including the prime minister of Israel, who sent out a AI-generated image, BB honoring Trump around his neck with a giant chain. Is that how it's awarded? I don't think so.
No,
with the Nobel Peace Prize, it says, give real Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. He deserves it. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get to later on, so please take it on Patreon, Locals, and X if you have not already, whether you believe that it's appropriate to award President Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. We'll talk a little bit about that. And interesting, looking back at why Barack Obama was given the Nobel Peace Prize and then compare it to people who are pushing back against Donald Trump getting it. It's very, very interesting. But to me, even more so than anything else, watching that historic moment play out and the
You could feel it in the air that something important was about to happen. So to see that happen in front of us was quite significant. But the White House is very cool. Yes, I'm not too cool to act like, wait, I don't want to act cool. I'm not too cool to act cool because I thought it was really cool. Does that make sense? You know,
sure.
Some people be like, oh, the White House. Yeah, no, it's no big deal. No, I was totally jazzed. Jazzed to be there. Had a great time. Took a bunch of pictures. Geeked out. It's very small inside, though. I was very surprised by that. Quite small. The same when you go in the Capitol, it's like, it's not smaller in here than it makes it look on TV. But anyway, I missed you guys. And so I was like thinking, maybe I'll stay in D.C. for an extra day. There was a lot of, you know, people who wanted to do interviews and stuff like that. And I was like, no, I have to get back and tell my friends all about my trip to the White House. So here I am on 1.5 hours of sleep. All right. Coming up next, we'll take a little break from some national news, talk about some things happening locally, including a local school district installing a medical clinic so students could get direct access to medical care without parental consent. They're sure making it easy for them, aren't they? First, if you're especially now with the news of what's happening in the Middle East, certainly I think nothing is done until Hamas lives up to its obligations to release all the hostages, to comply with everything. Israel too, right? But I think things are looking good. But anything major that happens like that, of course, it can have economic implications. So if you're wondering about that or other things happening globally, maybe with the tariff situation, and you're worried about your retirement portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital. Zach and his team specialize in managing risk, and they're really just going to kind of give you a back-to-basics speech about everything happening, but kind of the basic fundamentals of value investing. They'll talk about, you know, the outlook for the remainder of 2025, maybe what's coming up in 2026, how some of what's happening globally might be impacting your retirement portfolio. And they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and just get a second opinion with Zach. I mean, say, hey, Brandy told me to get a second opinion with you, worried about my retirement or whatever it is, and he'll do just that. Okay, are we doing a double dose of unbelievable today? Things are really that unbelievable. All right, you might be sending your child to school not to get an education, but to get care from a doctor without your consent. Let's talk about it in our first edition of Unbelievable. So look, I know in Washington State, the law is, it's ridiculous, but kids over the age of 13 can get a lot of different types of medical care without parental consent. And if your teen is over the age of 13, even if, you know, you bring them to the doctor, the doctor does not have to show you your child's medical records unless, like, your child, I mean, they basically have autonomy under the law. Like, you know, your 14-year-old could go get treated for an STD and you don't know anything about it. You don't know what's going on. And that's just the way the government wants it. The government wants a dissolution of the nuclear family because that is an easier way to control people and to control a population. So they kind of break up your family unit. And then an hour and a half of sleep, people. I can't talk today. I think we all know that. Try to break up the family unit, and then they have more control over people individually. And this is something that, look, are there a few things that, you know, a teenager, if they're really worried about telling their parents, where it's not the end of the world if they go see a doctor on their own? Sure. I mean, I'm not a parent, though, so it's difficult for me to say that. I'm not going to wish away other people's parental rights, but the state of Washington has already taken them away. So we already know that that's the law. Now, there are some more significant medical procedures, et cetera, that you do still need parental permission in Washington State. For example, and this is a common misnomer, you can't get gender mutilation surgery without parental consent. You can't, as a 16-year-old, walk in and say, I want my breast cut off, and they do that without telling your parents, unless, and this is the big asterisk, unless they can find one doctor who will declare you a mature minor. You all know how woke our medical institutions have become. I mean, just until recently, along 405 in Bellevue, one of the medical institutions had a big trans graphic thing up on the side of their wall for like years. I think it came down though. I think because of Trump's thing, it came down. But it was like the medical institutions are totally wokeified. So you really think it's hard for a kid to find one doctor who'll declare them a mature minor? All they'll have to say is they'll find a woke doctor and they'll just say, my parents don't agree with my gender identity. And if I don't get this, I'll kill myself or whatever. And the doctor would be like, okay, you're a mature minor. So to me, you know, there is a way around all of it for kids. And it's not enough for the government to pass these laws saying, you know,
you don't have any right. And like Jamie Peterson, I think we have this clip. Remember State Senator Jamie Peterson? This clip went viral nationwide for the very inartful way that he described how our state law works.
Kids over 13 have the complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that.
Yeah, just insane. And the way he said it, and then he went on to say, basically, if a girl's old enough to bleed, she's old enough to make decisions about her body. It was just really grotesque stuff, but it is technically the law. So now it's not enough for that, for them to say, yes, you can make these decisions on your own. They've got to bring that medical care as close to a child as possible. They want to make it as easy as possible. School to doctor to gender clinic pipeline. 100%, that's what's happening. We talked about a story, gosh, I think it was Monday, the Seattle Public School District. This was originally broken by the National Review, but Seattle Children's Hospital worked with Seattle Public Schools to put these trans supply lockers right in the school, which is like they'd ship a locker to the school, and then they'd fill the locker with stuff that trans kids need to like tape down their breasts and tuck in their junk. And they could go to this. I mean, you guys, I hate talking about this stuff because it sounds so pervy. And it is. And then I've got to talk about it. But yeah, so they did this in Seattle Public School District with taxpayer funds, by the way. Because, I mean, we know that Seattle Children's Hospital gets subsidized with taxpayer funds. And so, yeah, they have this like, oh, your kid can come to school now, right? We already know in the Seattle Public School District, there's a, what, 500% increase in kids identifying as gender X over the last 5 years, something like that. It's because they're being indoctrinated at school. And then they've got teachers who are convincing them you're not, you know, the gender that you think you are. And to help you out, we've got this locker and you can take stuff from it anytime you want. And it's got chest binders and it's got tuckable underwear and all of these things for you. So the child can hide it from their parents, go to school, you know, looking how they normally look, and then trans themselves literally there at the locker. I mean, it's crazy stuff. So this is even more nefarious to me. So this is Everett Public Schools. And so the Seattle one, reporters had to dig up that information. Like they had some FOIA requests to get this. No, this is Everett Public Schools on their public Facebook page. They're very proud of this. And I think that's important to note. Exciting news for Everett Public Schools. The Community Health Center of Snohomish County has officially opened two new school-based health centers at Everett and Cascade High Schools. These on-campus clinics provide medical, dental, and mental health services to students at no cost. Services will be available during the school year with appointments offered before, during, and after school to accommodate students' busy schedules. We understand the importance of privacy and confidentiality in healthcare. The school-based health model promotes parental involvement while ensuring a safe and respectful space where students can discuss their health concerns openly, knowingly, and knowing their information will be kept confidential. This partnership solidifies our shared commitment to offering accessible and coordinated healthcare to students in a way that meets their needs. Together, we're making it easier for students to stay healthy, thrive in school, and reach their full potential. No, you're making it easier for kids to get things done behind their parents' backs. And this says the model promotes parental involvement. Promotes it. Well, how does it promote it? Because they can still come in there, and as you say, it's a safe and respectful space where students can discuss their health concerns openly, knowing their information will be kept confidential from their parents. So what do you mean you're promoting parental involvement? Do you just tell them like, hey, you know, you should tell your parents about this if you feel comfortable, but you don't have to, don't worry about it. That's probably the extent of the parental involvement. And you might say, well, Brandy, what's the big deal if, you know, a kid can still go to a clinic somewhere else without their parents? This clinic's in the school. So there is no extra step you have to take between the indoctrination phase and the medicalization phase. It's all being done under the roof of our public schools paid for without our taxpayer funds. And it's all being done out of sight from parents. And you, with what we know about some of the teachers in this state and the Washington Education Association, would you put it past teachers to say, and to direct kids not to tell their parents? Of course not. That's what 100% happening. Oh, I wouldn't tell your parents that you want to be Tammy, not Timmy, because they won't understand. Not like me, not like your teacher, not like the government. Go to the health clinic. It's right down the hallway. In fact, I'll let you out of class to go. We can go together. I can be there for you. The government can be there for you. It's really, it's crazy, creepy stuff. I feel so bad for parents who can't pull their kids out of this public education system. And one of the things I'm going to harp on every single time now that we do a story on education is I am going to harp on public school teachers to drop their dues to the WEA. If you are a teacher, I guarantee the vast majority of teachers are sane and look at this and they're like, why are we keeping stuff from parents? Why are we bringing clinics into the schools? Why are we promoting radical gender ideology? If that's you and you're a teacher and you're a member of the WEA, you are part of the problem. You're funding the indoctrination. You're funding their ability to do all these things. You're funding their snitch hotlines to go snitch on lawful signature gatherers. If you're a teacher, there is no benefit that the teachers union gives you that outweighs the harm you're doing by giving them money. The best thing that could happen to this state is for the Washington Education Association to go bankrupt. And the best thing that could happen in this country is for the National Teachers Union to go bankrupt. And they won't, as long as you keep paying them dues. And you might think, no big deal. It is a big deal. Cancel your dues today. Inform them today that you're not going to renew. And then tell your teacher friends who you know are sane to do the same. And sure, will the state just backfill the WEA with stolen taxpayer funds like it did this last session? Probably. But you, at least you can say, your hands are clean. I'm not going to be part of it. And you can go actually do the job of a teacher and focus on academics and know that you're not contributing to that nonsense with your hard-earned money. No excuse anymore to continue to be a member of the teachers' union. All right, let's do it. Double dose of unbelievable. Maybe the most infamous council member in the entire country at this point. Is that fair? Is that an overstatement? Is that going to... I would worry about making his head too big, but I don't think it can get any bigger. He thinks a lot of himself. We're, of course, talking about Linwood City Councilmember Josh Binda, who loves posting shirtless pics of himself on his Instagram to advertise speeches that he gives to school children. Totally normal stuff. So, of course, story after story after story after story has come out about Josh Binda. He's had all these campaign violation issues, you know, using city property to shoot this cool video to talk about these speeches he gives to kids, you know, taking pictures shirtless. So he had a misuse of campaign finance, was late paying it, said he didn't know how to write a check, didn't know how to pay it. The Linwood Times has done fantastic reporting on this. They found out he didn't even live in his district, lied about where he lived, was registered to vote somewhere else, all these problematic things, the misuse of campaign funds, all of that. So we have another breaking exclusive from the Linwood Times on Josh Binda. And I knew this was going to happen. I knew as soon as they started digging, because when you find one lie with a politician, especially the obvious lies, where it's like, why'd you lie about that? I mean, he lied about living in the city of Linwood and had a fellow council member who would often drive him home to Everett. So it's like you're lying about something and then you're not even trying to hide the lie. So once you start unraveling, so much other stuff comes with that. So this from the Linwood Times. Linwood Council Vice President Binda appears to have falsely claimed a college degree in the official voter pamphlet. I knew that was the case. I knew that was going to be the case. It says Linwood Council Vice President Josh Binda appears to have falsely claimed in this Snohomish County voters pamphlet, page 73, that he graduated from Western Governors University with a Bachelor of Science degree in business management. Further, no enrollment records for Joshua Binda were found to confirm that he ever attended the University of Washington, as he claims in his profile on the City of Linwood webpage, along with claims he made to several media outlets. So he said that he attended the University of Washington. No, they have no enrollment records. The Linwood Times checked. That's all it takes sometimes. You just have to check. Binda claimed to be currently, quote, attending the University of Washington, where he's majoring in business management and minoring in political sciences. It says that on the city's website, and it said that 2023, 2024, and as of the time of this publication 2 days ago. However, according to Victor Bolta, media contact for the University of Washington, a review of the student database, which Bolta confirmed shows alumni as well as and then current students, shows no student having attended the University of Washington under Binda's name. Okay, so two lies here. Says on the city website he attends the University of Washington to do all these things. doesn't. University of Washington says, no student here by that name, says that he has a degree from Western Governors University. What did he claim his degree was in? Business management. Well, here's what the Linwood Times got. Western Governors University was unable to locate a degree for Joshua. However, he did have some dates of attendance. So he went there, but they said he has not graduated. There's a projected graduation date, if he had kept going, of May 31st, 2027. But he does not have a Bachelor of Science in Business Management from WGU. The other thing he allegedly lied about, so in his bio, and this is the voter pamphlet. So if you're watching, what you see on the left is the voter pamphlet. What you see on the right is the Linwood Times fact-checking. So his voter pamphlet said, had that educational thing, false. Binda graduated from Kamiak High School and attended Snow Isle Tech, where he got his aerospace engineering certification. He was the student body president both years he was there. Josh currently is attending the University of Washington, where he's majoring in business management and minoring in political science. The Linwood Times also found out, what a dumb thing to lie about, that there are no records they could dig up showing he was even the student body president. So let's see, in one voter pamphlet, according to the Linwood Times, we've got one lie, two lies, three lies. In a paragraph that's like this big, almost everything in here is a lie, according to the Linwood Times and the University of Washington. No, he's not a student here. According to Western Governors University, no, we don't have a degree for him here. He hasn't gotten a degree from us in business management. And then when it comes to being a student body president, oh, because kid that young, that's really, what are you going to put on your resume, right? Not a lot of life experience, so I guess you have to make things up. So I was a student body president. Linwood Times couldn't even find that. What about him is true, besides the fact that he's a narcissist? And I think it also shows. And I said something similar on the show last week, and the Tacoma News Tribune wrote an article basically painting me as a racist, but I don't care, so I'll say it again. He can only do this because he's black. That's the only reason. He can only do it because he was a black, like, BLM type rioter, whatever it was, not rioter, but a BLM protester. And that's the only way he can get away with it, is he's a young black man, and all the stuff that's happened. I mean, he had a picture where he, like, put his face on half of a civil rights icon's face, John Lewis, and even a Democratic state senator was condemning him, saying, like, that is... he's not John Lewis. It was crazy. So many things have happened with this guy. And it's like, he's like Teflon. And it's because he's black. The system won't allow in Washington State in this woke progressiveness. Oh no, he can basically do whatever he wants. And I said it last week in the context of that assistant principal in the Tacoma, Washington school district that went on social media and said, America has a white male problem. And also rapped about shooting up a school before Christmas and killing kids and Santa Claus. And he kept his job. In fact, the Tacoma School District wouldn't even respond to our request for comment about it. Why? Because he's black. And they let him say whatever he wants. If it was a white teacher who said the exact same things, a white teacher who rapped about a school shooting, he would have been fired instantly. So it's a total double standard. And Josh Binda is the beneficiary of that double standard, big time. All right, coming up next, man, I was dying. One of the reasons why I was like, I got to come back and do the show. Beyond I had to come back and tell you guys about my trip to the White House. I had to come back and talk to you about this Katy Porter video. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen when it comes to a politician's interview. And I've watched it probably 150 times. And we're going to watch it again together. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge because you can save money and get better insurance. And it doesn't cost you anything. So there's really only an upside. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. You'd become a member of the First Mark family along with me, Nicole, Undivided, and so many other members of the Undivided community. We got a big old First Mark family growing here on Undivided. So here's how it works. Go to FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Go schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. Say, hey, Brandy told me to take the First Mark Challenge. What do I do next? They'll schedule a time to talk to you about your current insurance, go over your insurance needs. Then they'll go out and do all the work, shop the market for you. You know, it's not some one of those like stupid little tools you'll use online where it's like, in 5 seconds, give me the best rates. No, you're not going to get the best insurance. You might get the best price, but then your house is going to burn down and you're not going to get an insurance payout for it. I don't know. It's just not a good idea. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and then they proactively make sure everything is up to date, meets your needs every single year. It totally, for the rest of your life, will eliminate your insurance woes. Firstmarkinsurance.com, the very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. Wow, the meltdown of all meltdowns. So Katie Porter right now is the front runner, Congresswoman Katie Porter, to be the next governor of California. And there's a pretty long list of Democrats running, but she, once Kamala Harris said she wasn't running, Katie Porter kind of became the assumed front runner, you know, name recognition and all that stuff, but it's not given by any means. So the CBS affiliate down in California was doing this, and it's so funny because I can just put myself in her shoes, because we used to do stuff like this because I was the political reporter at Fox 13. We used to do things like this all the time, where we'd bring in all the candidates, we'd ask them a series of questions, you know, try to keep them very similar, and then we'd post like the, so people knew, here's an issue, you got an answer to the same question from every candidate, try to keep it fair, right? So this reporter, her name's Julie Watts. She's the CBS News local investigative reporter. And so she is talking about the efforts to redistrict in California and asking basically each of the candidates, you know, for Trump voters and supporters who might not agree with that, you know, how are you going to try to earn their vote? Because this might be something that makes them hesitant since you support this redistricting effort. Here is part of the interaction on that.
What do you say to the 40% of California voters who you'll need in order to win, who voted for Trump?
How would I need them in order to win, ma'am?
Well, unless you think you're going to get 60% of the vote. You think you'll get 60%. Everybody who did not vote for Trump will vote for you. That's what you're
saying. In a general election, yes. If it is me versus a Republican, I think that I will win the people who did not vote for Trump.
What if it's you versus another Democrat?
I don't intend that to be the case.
So how do you not intend that to be the case? Are you going to ask them not to run?
No. I'm saying I'm going to build the support. I have the support already in terms of name recognition.
But you just said you don't need those Trump voters.
Well, you asked me if I needed them to win.
So you don't think
I feel like this is unnecessarily argumentative. What is your question?
The question is the same thing I asked everybody, that this is being called the empowering voters to stop Trump's power grab. Every other candidate has answered this question. This is not
argumentative. And I said I support it.
So, and the question is, what do you say to the 40% of voters who voted for Trump?
Oh, I'm happy to say that. It's the do you need them to win part that I don't understand. I'm happy to answer the question as you have it written, and I'll answer it.
Answer the question as you have it written, and I'll answer it. First, she's technically correct. In a general election, she doesn't need, California's a lot like Washington State, you can win without the Trump voters. She's technically correct. Now, not the case for a primary election, which I think is what the reporter is trying to get at. And in a state like California, you could have a situation where you have two Democrats advance in a race for statewide office. We've had that in Washington. And then you absolutely need to win over the Trump voters. But besides all that, it's a softball question. It turned very contentious. We'll play more of it in a moment. But it's basically an opportunity for you to act like you care about everyone in the state, even if you don't agree with them politically. Give some just like, look, you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to sacrifice my principles and my values. But, you know, there's issues like on the economy here, things that they might relate to, whatever it is. You want to seem, I don't know, relatable and approachable and interested in serving everyone. She does not give a F. She's like, I don't need them. Like, I don't need them. So it's such a softball question that any candidate running for that office should expect at some point. Like, what do you say to people who aren't, you know, think they don't want to support you or vote for you? So it's wild that she gets so defensive about it. But then it continues, and Katie Porter says that she wants to stop the interview.
What I'm saying to you is that...
Well, to those voters. Okay, so you...
I don't want to keep doing this. I'm going to call it. Thank you.
You're not going to do the interview with us?
Nope, not like this. I'm not. Not with 7 follow-ups to every single question you ask.
Baby.
Every other candidate has answered our follow-ups.
I don't care. I want to have a pleasant, positive conversation in which you ask me about every issue on this list. And if every question you're going to make up a follow-up question, then we're never going to get there.
Ms.
And
Porter,
we're just going to circle around.
I am an investigative reporter.
I have never had to do this before, ever.
You've never had to have a conversation with a reporter?
To end an interview.
Okay, but every other candidate has done this.
what part of I'm me? I'm running for governor because I'm a leader. So I am going to make
really sure. So you're not going to answer questions from reporters? Okay, why don't we go through? I will continue to ask follow-up questions because that's my job as a journalist, but I will go through and ask these, and if you don't want to answer, you don't want to answer. So nearly every legislative
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you. And I don't want this all on camera.
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you either. I would love to continue to ask these questions so that we can show our viewers what every candidate feels about every one of these issues that they care about. And redistricting is a massive issue. We're going to do an entire story just on the responses to that question.
I've never seen anything like it. I've had my share of contentious interviews, you know, with Governor Inslee. King County Executive Dow Constantine is one who's famously just does not like any sort of pushback and interviews, never encountered anything like that. She has clearly no self-awareness for how she's coming across in that moment. And there's some things she says in there that are very telling and are an indictment of the media as well. Now, this reporter does a great job. And she's sort of like, you can tell she's so shocked by how quickly things spiraled out of control. But she's like trying to get her back on track. And look, this is my job. All the other candidates did that. But the fact that Katie Porter has been in politics for so long in California and believes that she can act like that in front of a news camera and there won't be consequences for it shows that she's probably acted like that in front of a news camera and there hasn't been consequences for it in the past because it probably didn't air. I mean, it shows that, you know, she's not used to hard questions. She's not used to, and she says, I'm not going to do this if there's going to be 7 follow-up questions. And then she accuses her of making up follow-up questions. Most follow-up questions are made up in the moment. Yes, you answer the question. Maybe you don't touch on some aspect. And so in the moment, yes, I guess we make up a follow-up question to ask you. It's like she's never heard of the concept of a follow-up. Or she believes that all you can only ask the question exactly as you have it written down. And if you do that, I'll answer it for you. But that whole very creepy, I don't want this to be an unpleasant experience with you. Like, is it about to get unpleasant? And then I didn't know a lot of this. I've heard the rumors in political circles that she's just horrible to her staff. And then, of course, after this video came out, there was another video that surfaced. I don't think we have it, but where she was recording something with, I believe, the energy department under Biden. And she's clearly in her kitchen. She's on Zoom. And one of her staff members walks in the shot behind her. And she's like, get the out of my shot. And like, it's crazy. I mean, I can be unhinged, but not that unhinged. And whenever she puts out, she also allegedly dumped one of my favorite foods on her husband's head, scalding hot mashed potatoes.
Yes, I saw that.
It was like in court documents because they got divorced and he was saying all these horrible things she would do. She allegedly, I think we know it's true, dumped scalding hot mashed potatoes on her husband's head and like burnt him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the best Democrat in a state full of Democrats. That's the best Democrat that you have. Is that not telling? And she won't apologize for it. She wouldn't apologize. So the two videos that have come out, this one and the one with, you know, where she's saying, get the out of my shot. She says, I think it's well known that I have high expectations of myself and of my staff. What does that have to do with about expectations? It's absolutely wild.
Did you see the video where her daughter cried when Trump was elected because she might not be able to get an abortion if she gets raped?
She says that happened.
Right.
That her daughter said, and her daughter's young, I can't
12.
Remember the age.
Yeah. She was 12.
Oh, that her daughter came to her after Trump was elected and was crying and said, what if I'm raped? Can I not get an abortion?
Right. Well, if your daughter is that scared.
That's something you
that's,
did.
That's you.
That's you. That's crazy. The other thing that's interesting about the Katie Porter thing, she's known for like her very contentious congressional hearing questions where she'll use props and she'll grill people. So she likes to grill people at congressional hearings, but she can't. She has a complete mental health breakdown when a reporter lobs her a softball question. But I'll just say it. She'll probably be the next governor of California. And then we'll be wishing for Gavin Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be praying and begging Gavin Newsom to come on back. It's wild, the low, low bar to be able to be elected a governor of a state. Like, look at Bob Ferguson. That demonstrable liar.
It's
like,
true.
Has absolutely contributed to all these crises that are hurting our state dramatically. He could still be governor because it's vote blue no matter who.
And nobody wants the
job. Nobody
wants
the job. No sane people want the job, right? All right. Coming up next, we'll get to our subscriber poll. We'll talk about the merits of whether President Donald Trump should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. I think I know your answers to it, but I'm more interested to hear your thought process behind it. I've got about a week and a half until the Engage Conference at the Main Bauer Center in Bellevue. I heard from a lot of people when I held that event last weekend that they were coming. I'm going to be hosting or being part of a panel with my friend Jonathan Cho, who was out in D.C. with me. We had so much fun. We're going to be talking about housing policy, both around landlord-tenant laws, rent control, how the media covers housing policy, also the homeless industrial complex and how it factors into everything from housing supply, cost of housing, and all of that. So please join us. You can sign up right now to attend the Engage Conference. There's a ton of other good speakers and panels as well. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. You can sign up for Engage there. And while you're there, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, you really do need to be a member of RHA. They can help you navigate this complex world of laws and regulations. rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, this might be my first 100% poll. I'm not sure, but we'll see. I asked, should President Donald Trump be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize? And I don't know if they've already picked the winner or if literally, because they're supposed to announce it Friday, right?
Okay.
So that's tomorrow.
Right.
So like this deal just came down. What if they already picked the winner and it was someone else?
Well, it probably should have been him anyway.
That's the thought, is that he's already done enough, right? Nicole, do I even have to ask?
Probably not.
Should I think the president and what's the rationale, I guess?
I think he probably should have received it back in his first term. So,
oh, you do? For
I
what?
Mean, there was it was world peace back in the first term.
Just so. For not start, you get a war, you get a present just for not starting a new war, because we're so used.
No, he ended some back then too.
We're so used to, yeah, as long as you don't start a world war, we're going to give you the Nobel Peace Prize. We're almost to that point, right? Actually, not 100%. 85% saying yes, 15% saying no.
Wow, 15%.
Yes. Let's see.
Even Fetterman today said, yep.
They can't spin this. They cannot spin it. And it's one of those things where it's, you know, like the autism thing, like autism doesn't need to be cured, you know, and we always joke that if he cured cancer, people would be like, cancer doesn't need to be cured. And then, now they're going to be like, Gazans have a right to starve to death. Like, Gazans should be able to choose whether to die by missile strike. It's just going to be crazy.
No win.
Kathleen says, I voted yes, but with a caveat. First, broker a peace deal that sticks between Israel and Hamas. He's already ended so many other conflicts, though.
So how long
stopped
does that
him
to
from
stick?
Even starting? let's see. Bloom Kitty says, yes, he should have been after the Abraham Accords. So maybe to your point that maybe he should have gotten this a long time ago. Mike says, well, if not this year, next. It might be too soon to see if this peace deal in the Middle East lasts. Slim says, no, I don't think he should be. However, he is more deserving of it than Obama ever was. Yeah, and I was looking up, I should have pulled it up, but the description for why Obama was given the Nobel Peace Prize, it was like basically something along the lines of, for fostering, you know, international dialogue. Okay. Uh-huh. And he got the Nobel Peace Prize. So if that's the bar, Trump has met it, exceeded it, times 10. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the bar, then we're being consistent. But also, like, is it, here's my argument for no, okay?
For no?
Here's what my okay. argument for no would be. I don't think we need to necessarily award leaders for, like, ending wars. I think that we should have leaders that the goal is no wars, the goal is end. Like, I think the Nobel Peace Prize should be for non-politicians. Politicians, like, that's your job. You know, that's my argument for no, is this is the expectation. America is the leader in the world. We should be able to do these things. Yes, he's cleaning up Biden's mess. But like, these are politicians. So should we award them for helping secure peace? That's my only sort of like, okay. I don't know. Maybe
the
it's too many awards going
Union
out.
The European Union was given the Nobel Peace Prize. That's interesting.
Did you hear Trump at the White House suggest he was going to give us like the Presidential Medal of Freedom or something?
He said some of you, which that's interesting.
Of everyone there, the only one who I think would be deserving of it is Andy Ngo.
Andy, because he had to leave the country.
Literally had to leave the country and was blowing the whistle on Antifa at great personal risk to himself and at a time when nobody else would.
Uh-huh.
And he endured years of vilification by the media for it. And to this day, I mean, he suffers from what we endured at the hands of Antifa. So I think, I mean, as much as I would love one, of course, I want to earn it. And I don't think I've done that by any stretch. But if anyone were to get one, I think Andy Ngo for sure.
I agree.
Let's see. E says, in the past 15 years, the Nobel has been taken out People that did not deserve it have won and tarnished it. Love him, hate him, or be neutral about him. Look at it from another country's perspective. And Trump has stopped wars and is doing more than anyone else right now to stop wars, and truly is doing good work for that and what he has done to secure the border. Yes, absolutely. If this was 60 years ago, he would have had it already, and there wouldn't be a question about the greater good aspect. He'd be up there with Churchill. The other question is, will the Nobel, you know, whatever, it's a commission, I think, will they tarnish themselves with giving Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize while his ICE goons are out there indiscriminately hunting down people on American soil? That's how it'll be painted if he gets it. So, all right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up momentarily. First, 2025 has been a relatively strong year for real estate. There's definitely more houses on the market. For a while, there was like no supply whatsoever, but they're still sitting a little longer than they had been. So that means that you can't just throw your house on the market and get a bajillion dollars for it like you could in like 2020, 2021. But that doesn't mean that you can't get a good price for your home with the help of Wes Jones and his team at Wes Jones and Associates. They have a Listing Boost concierge service, which will help make sure that your home is properly prepared for sale. So that could include some cosmetic upgrades, and they handle all of that for you. So it's like, man, you really don't have to do much. You just got to have a house that you want to sell, and Wes Jones can take care of the rest. Start by going to sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Oh, you guys gave us a bunch of super chats today. Thank you. That will partially cover the very expensive cost of going to the White House at the last minute. But it was like, I don't care if it's $100,000. I will sell a kidney to go to this White House visit. But yeah, it was not cheap. So thank you for these. I'm just a ray of sunshine. $50 super chat. Brandy, you are so impressive. Keep up the great work. I was excited to hear your sound bites on Megyn Kelly this morning. Oh, that's great. And I'm also supposed to be on with Laura Ingraham tonight. But last time I was supposed to be on Laura Ingraham, they canceled on me. But I think tonight is an exception because I heard she played my TDS cut. So maybe I'm going to go tell her in person so you can watch Laura Ingraham.
Has played that cut.
You know, I knew I had the right instincts, but it was funny because I always talk about, you know, my hair, how it's like one of my best qualities,
yeah,
right?
A little hair.
I know, Nicole. Thanks for pointing it out.
The whole time I was like, I wish she had her phone in front of her so I could text her.
No, it was worse than that because I leave the hotel and my hair looks fabulous, like the best it's ever looked. I got rained on. I got rained on waiting at the White House security gate and my hair just went poof. And so I was like, oh my God, I was in a panic. I was like, I'm going to meet the president. My hair is my thing. And it's wet and frizzy, and I was so disappointed.
Keep
and
humble.
I got some little thing in there, whatever it is. But then all the little leftists were like, why does Trump think she's very attractive when she's full of fillers and has hair extensions? And I was like, first of all, no, this is the natural glow and grow of someone who doesn't have TDS.
Wow.
But thank you for thinking my hair is fake. Well, Matthew Cook. Oh, Captain, my Captain, I cannot be happier for you. Yesterday, that was a culmination of all your hard work over the years. You are a lighthouse shining truth through the storm of lies. Wow, that is deep as shit. Did you steal that from somewhere? Thank you for all you do. Bolt up. Brandy, you represented yourself and us so well at the roundtable. Thank you for sharing our story and bringing national attention to what's happening here in Seattle. Thank you. Baron of Gray Matter, I'm so proud of you, Brandy. So well spoken. Thank you for your insight and support of Andy. Wow, this is really going to send me home with a big head. Moon Goddess, Brandy, we are so proud of you. Absolutely loved the middle finger that you gave the Legacy News. You were a dignified, gracious, beautiful savage and couldn't be any prouder of how you represented us. We love you. I love you too. Lady Jane, so proud of you. Smash that like button, y'all. Appreciate that. All right, let's see here. Tara M, so amazing for you. Great work. Keep it up. Finally getting the attention it needs is long overdue. Sharon Brandy, you endeared yourself to the president and the rest of America just because you told the truth. Thank you. At first, I was like, should I prepare something? Because we only had 3 minutes each. And then I'm like, no, because I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, it was a very fun experience. On the Everett School's Secret Healthcare for Kids program. Not even secret. They posted it on their Facebook page.
But it's secret it's if the kids go there. You don't get to know if your kids go to the doctor during school.
You know, little wacko teachers are going to send them there.
I wonder if you get a notification that your kids miss class or if it gets secretly excused.
I'm sure that it doesn't. I'm sure that they do not tell parents. Julie B, the health clinic cost is a burden to taxpayers and nothing is free. Right. They say it's a free health clinic. It's not free.
Not free.
We're paying for it. The government doesn't do things for free. And there is an even bigger burden for families because parents are being left out of their child's mental and physical care. Scrappy Bob Barker, schools are already mutilating their brain. Homeschool your kids. Scrappy Bob Barker.
I know.
It's like Bob Barker, but
it's kind of Happy Gilmore
presumably
style,
alive maybe. And scrappy, yeah. Mm-hmm. He is dead, right? We did lose Bob, yeah, didn't we?
We lost Bob.
That's unfortunate. Yep, sorry, yep. Bob. Chuck Heller, this is all part of the Marxist, socialist, communist agenda. Yep. Mm-hmm. On Josh Binda lying again. Allegedly, according to the Linwood Times. Robert Parr, when a candidate lies in a voter pamphlet, what are the options to take legal action? So there's a couple things. People often don't know that the voter pamphlet is not fact-checked. You can literally put anything in the voter pamphlet, and the state doesn't fact-check it, which it's a slippery slope, but I'm in support of. Because what would stop the state, the government, from fact-checking Republicans differently than Democrats? So you're introducing this, like, personal bias into that. So it falls on the voter to be able to fact check things and ultimately the media to fact check things and then let the voters know and maybe there's consequences. But we had that state representative who, Clyde Shavers, yep, who lied about his military service. And it's
nothing
like,
happened.
And it didn't come out that it was a lie until ballots had already hit mm-hmm. people's mailboxes. So it's really about the media and good for the Linwood Times. And that's the importance of independent outlets like that. It's a hyper-local story. They're a hyper-local newspaper, and that's what they focus on. It's like the city of Linwood and, yes, the surrounding areas, but they have the time to look into these individual candidates and mm-hmm. see what's going on. But as far as legal options, there is some sort of process by which voters can make an argument that they were, like, materially misled by a candidate. I can't remember how it goes, but it came up after the Clyde Shavers mm-hmm. thing. It's kind of like a recall type thing, but I don't exactly remember how the process works. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Jojo Potato, a business degree and doesn't know how to write a check. Ha, you know he lied. That is a really good point.
True.
He said that is such a good point. Said he had a business
how did
degree.
How did he go this long without being exposed?
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Smart thinking.
Really
on Katie Porter's meltdown, Joshua Tift, she wants you to ask her what her favorite ice cream flavor is. Yeah. William, she doesn't think her constituencies are going to ask her follow-up questions. You think she's going to talk to her constituents? Oh, that's precious.
She doesn't want seven. Not seven follow-ups.
No. Six follow-ups is appropriate.
Yeah.
T. Blaze, if you ever want to have an unpleasant experience, then you shouldn't be a politician. And that's the other thing is, you can't handle questions from a reporter, but you want to lead an entire state. I don't know that is, and that's really the fundamental issue, wow. is if you're that thin-skinned, how are you going to lead a state?
Can you imagine missing Gavin Newsom?
Ugh. That slimy guy. No, I can't. Idaho Mom, a $10 super chat. Thank you. Papa Woody, Trump during the Dipsley reign didn't love Washington. Maybe now that he has heard Brandy, he may send some love our way, homies. I hope so. There were so many things I want to talk to him about. Like, we need help with radical gender ideology. We need help in Washington on a variety of fronts. But, you know, I didn't want to disrespect the president's time and go off track of, you know, the mm-hmm. Antifa sort of theme of things. But yes, really loved. And then he came after. He was shaking hands and he stopped and he shook my hand. He said, you did a very good job. You did a very good job. I was like, thank you, Mr. President.
Yay.
I'm not too cool to say. I was totally, aww, totally starstruck. Now, I was a little worried during it. Two things, just between us. I had just called for Pam Bondi to resign.
Oh, I was thinking
on
that the whole
media.
Time.
I'm like, what if Pam Bondi saw that I called for her to resign and now she's going to be there? I'm like, that's awkward.
Did you shake her hand as well?
No, she wasn't feeling well, so she told people she didn't want to shake anybody's hand.
Got it.
So, so there was that. And then, what was the other thing? So the Pam Bondi thing, I feel like there was something about Trump. What was I just talking about? Hour and a half of sleep. I don't know.
I was very jealous of...
I was worried that Trump was going to bring up the war zone thing and ask us if we thought it was a war zone or ask us if we thought he should send in the National Guard, because I would have said no. Mm. And I would have. I wouldn't have minded, but I didn't want it to become this weird thing because I just wanted to keep the focus on Antifa and whatever it is. But had he asked me, I would have said, no, I don't believe it's a war zone and I don't necessarily believe the National Guard needs to go in, but I do want agents to be able to make arrests and protect themselves. But that did not come up. Did not come up.
Yeah, Marco Rubio, I was kind of jealous about that.
Oh, yeah.
He's very pretty.
Oh, yeah, totally. Handsome man. And just very competent. And it was just cool to see that. And he came and said hello to all of us on his way out for them to go, you know, broker peace in the Middle East. So,
big day.
Did feel, if you watch the whole thing, I felt so bad for the media after a while. Oh, my God. They just stand there. They have to stand the whole time behind this rope. And they just take abuse from us, from Trump. he calls out individual ones. And at some point, you see in the video, I just put this thing over my face because I was just laughing.
What's
I'm
their
like,
reaction?
Nothing, because they're so used to
they're just stone-faced the whole
time. Yep. The one CNN reporter he was sort of calling out was not, had kind of more of a RBF, but
they don't even laugh, like they're past laughing at it.
Yeah,
like, it's not
they're
funny.
Done with it. Yeah. They're done with it.
Wow.
All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check first. As we enter the fall and winter seasons, is your roof on its last legs? Well, you don't want to wait too long to find out. And as a homeowner, you kind of know. You know, there's every sort of schedule for things in your home that need to be replaced, and you know if your roof is on its last legs. So don't wait until the heavy rain hits and there's a leak. Call Valentine Roofing. They'll come in. They'll do a free roof assessment. And here's the best part. Maybe your roof can be repaired. Maybe you don't need a brand new roof, and they won't push you to try to get a new roof. They'll just come in, and they'll fix it. And if you do need a new roof, if it's leaking now, Valentine offers a free leak stop. They'll make sure the leaks are fixed so no further damage happens. Then they'll replace your roof. They even offer zero down financing for most projects, which I think is great. So you can get the work done now, pay over time. And they do more than just roofing. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great service. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, 206-ROOFING. Please tell them you heard about them on Undivided with me, Brandy Cruz. We would appreciate you supporting the businesses that support us. All right, this is a story that maybe we'll end up doing a little bit more on, but I thought it made a good closing sanity check for today. All right, another Washington YMCA is now making national news for what's happening in the locker room. So you remember we had the very infamous case of an elderly woman at her little old YMCA, and all she'd like to do is just go in and swim laps. YMCA, and then one day, poof, whoo, in the locker room, there's a man. And she complained about it, and she lost her membership to the YMCA. And she ended up suing. They ended up settling, although she didn't get her YMCA membership back. But Libs of TikTok shared this video of a mom who was horrified by a man in the YMCA girls' locker room.
I just walked into the family women's locker room with my children, and there was a grown f-ing man sitting in there by the showers. I instantly felt so unsafe, so uncomfortable, and thank God my children had gotten dressed before we got there. When I approached the staff, they basically told me that that person identifies as non-binary, and by Washington State, they are allowed to be in whatever bathroom they identify as. What in the actual f-? I can't even believe that we are having these conversations. Like, how is this even a discussion? How are we in a world where we have young children in a women's family locker room and there are grown-ass men in there and they are protected over our children? There's literally other bathrooms here that they can use that are designed for whatever you choose to be. I don't care if you choose to be a frog. I don't care. Get the out of the children and family locker room. I'm so upset that this is the world that we live in.
You should be. And you're right to call it out. And you're right to call it exactly what it is. It's insane. They're protecting grown men and their feelings or whatever sort of proclivity they might have, because I think that's a big part of it as well, over children, when there are other options for them. It's absolutely insane. And to be fair, it's really not the YMCA's fault. As she alluded to there, it's state law. And it's the Washington State Human Rights Commission and the laws in the state of Washington that force them, essentially, to allow dudes in the locker room. And so it's just wild. I feel for that mom, but we need more moms who are that fed up to speak out. That has been our closing sanity check. If you are new to Undivided, make sure you subscribe to support our show. That's how we do 4 live shows a week and a special show on Sundays. Cool experience at the White House. Really grateful to the president and to the press team at the White House for giving us an opportunity to be there to share our stories about Antifa and to hopefully try to help the administration take down Antifa once and for all. End the ninja cosplay reign of terror across the West Coast. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5, and that's how you can become a paid subscriber. Gosh, you guys, I really think that's it. Is it Thursday? Holy smokes. We got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers. So subscribers, I'll see you Sunday morning. The rest of you, I guess, will just have to wait till Monday at noon. Have a great weekend.